Hello and welcome to WNHH Radio's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to join me on an exploration of what makes the Elm City tick. Today we have the pleasure to visit with two people who are making New Haven tick by bringing new energy to the public arena. Our first guest, Sarah Ganong, chairs the local chapter of the Working Families Party. She also ran for mayor last year. Our second guest, Mohit Agrawal, chairs New Haven's budget watchdog agency, the Financial Review and Audit Commission. Welcome back to WNHH, Sarah. It's always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Gave me a slight promotion there. I'm actually heading the volunteer chapter here in New Haven and then the political director for the statewide
Okay,
party.
So you have a job.
Not the top dog, unfortunately.
You're the political director of the statewide party.
Yep.
And you also have been organizing New Haven's chapter.
Yes, that's correct.
And you live in New Haven.
I do.
Near Mamoon's.
Yes.
So you can go there at 1:30 in the morning when you're hungry.
I prefer not to comment on that, I think.
Okay.
More nights than I would like.
Speaking out of experience. I still, after decades, I still consider that the best falafel around, even though it's the least expensive. I think it tastes the best.
Yeah.
My question always was, I was talking to my friend with this, is it because when you have it the first time when you're younger, it's so good that you have that, it becomes your standard and you have a memory of the food being good? Or is it really just objectively still fantastic?
I think falafel? It just is objectively that good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And how good is the Working Families Party now? It's been around how long?
So we've been active in Connecticut about 15 years now, and nationally, I think this is our 20th anniversary.
And it's a party that has a separate line on ballots.
Yep, in a few states. So Connecticut and New York are both those states that we have separate ballot lines, but we're active in about 15 states. So a lot of those places will just simply endorse folks or work on campaigns, but people actually can't vote on a ballot line. So Connecticut's one of the lucky places where you can vote row C and really know that your vote is making a difference, which we're pretty excited about.
And it's a party, fair to say, they consider themselves progressives, Bernie Sanders Democrats, but Democrats. So it's not trying to start a third party in general to put the Democrats and Republicans out of business, unlike, let's say, the Green Party or the old Citizens
Party. So our theory of change is really making sure that we're getting folks into office who believe in our values and are going to win and use different strategies in order to do that. So sometimes it does mean running folks on our own line. Sometimes it does mean cross-endorsing folks in other major parties. And Connecticut's one of the places that we're able to do that. So last year, for instance, in Hartford and in Windham, which both have different kind of minor party rules where you're able to there's only a certain number of folks that can win office from one of the major parties. So there's seats that are a little bit easier to win. We ran and won somebody for town council in Windham and school board in Hartford, both working families only.
Oh, that's right, because those are great rules, I think, when you say that some of the people elected have to be not from the party that has all the other seats.
Yep.
The danger, I guess, in Hartford traditionally has been in city council. Sometimes Democrats just say, hey, come over there, register as that, and then we'll elect you too.
Yeah.
But you folks really are not about the personalities, you're about the issues completely.
Yeah, for sure, values-based.
So your issues would include pro-labor legislation, like minimum wage hikes, worker protections for organizing, paid family leave, that kind of stuff. But also just taxation that taxes the wealthy more and not the poor, that doesn't have austerity budgets. Instead, you believe in government being funded enough to run group homes and provide social services. Is that a fair kind of cross-section of your issues?
Sure. And I think adding in things that protect black and brown communities, immigrant communities, women, LGBTQ.
So that would include gay rights legislation. Now we have gay marriage. So now fighting back against givebacks in there, retrenchment, and civil rights, like about police misconduct.
Yes.
And maybe like at Yale these days, we have a story in Taze Independent about whether they release body cam video of how they dealt with people, the police. So those are your kind of issues.
Yeah, you have our platform now, nailed down. Thank you.
So when our listeners, when you go to the polls in New York or Connecticut, you often see a line, Democrats, Republicans, working families. Now, you gave the examples of Windham and Hartford, but what I've always seen is I just see all the Democrats listed under working families. I'll see Dan Malloy in the past. I always see Rose DeLauro. I see Pat Dillon. Is there really a difference? Are there times their names don't appear?
Yes, absolutely. There are many times that we don't cross-endorse folks or don't support people from the major parties who haven't voted on our issues. I think one great example of an issue that we were working on this year that there were a couple of corporate Democrats that didn't vote for was the Fair Work Week. So that was basically an idea to increase fair scheduling for folks. Right now, a lot of people...
This when you find out the night before your shift is going to be the next day at Starbucks.
The same morning, a lot of times,
and people can never do child care or their sleep gets all messed up. And Starbucks was embarrassed about it because they mastered that because they had all these algorithms with they'll know in an hour in advance or 5 hours in advance how many people I need each time based on all sorts of other factors like demand and all that.
Yeah.
So then people's lives are completely upended and they couldn't have their, and they don't make much money to begin with, and then they had no one to watch their kids. So what was this legislation going to do?
So it would have added an amount of time that folks had to be able to hear from their employer that they were going to be required to come into work. So a reasonable amount of time so they could do things like schedule childcare, be able to work an extra job. A lot of folks working these minimum wage jobs or lower than minimum wage, lower than a livable wage, actually aren't able to know kind of when they can take two jobs. So if you're working at Target, you aren't sure how to schedule at Walmart or something
as
like that.
As we move to an economy without as many people represented by labor unions and everyone kind of at the mercy of the employer.
Yeah.
So the idea is that I think that people know if they want to get your endorsement, which comes with people who work on elections. And Sarah, you're still in your 20s, but you've already made a big impact in elections. You came back from the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign where you played a major role in New England. And you and other Sanders supporters elected, you ran the campaign in Hampton right over the line here from New Haven. And you got Josh Elliott elected against a longstanding politician. He was young, first-time candidate, a Bernie person. And you really showed that this kind of politics can work. So people up there at Hartford know that if they're going to get your support to work on campaigns, they're going to be watched on those issues. So you just had a state legislative session. Working Families Party's issue didn't do so great this legislative session, did they? It's a short session where it's hard to get these kind of bills through. But you guys wanted the minimum wage raised, which we did too, up to $15 an hour. You wanted
thank you for that support.
Paid family leave.
Yep.
But what else were you pushing for?
So those were kind of two of the big ones that we were really disappointed didn't get called for a vote and didn't have the support, it seemed like, to pass. So that's something that we're really excited to be talking about with candidates and with people continuing to
knock doors,
too.
I love that positive view. Yeah. So it's an opportunity.
It is, yeah.
Because it takes years to pass this stuff.
It does.
Earned income tax credit took years to pass. Gay marriage, not as many years as we thought, but the court. So is your point, you didn't get it this session, but you advanced it, and now you're going to make it a campaign issue this fall.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And continue to talk to both Republicans, Democrats, independents, unaffiliateds, Working Families Party voters, and make sure that politicians realize that those are really important issues. I think paid family and medical leave, it has something like a 72% approval rating.
Wow.
There's a lot of politicians that would kill for a 72% approval rating. Yeah. So we're excited to keep talking about that and emphasizing how important it is and how it helps small businesses and families and workers in Connecticut.
So coming out of that session, this is a crucial election for people who care about the future of our state.
Yep.
I'm not even thinking about the governor's office, which is office open, which that matters. But it's really about the legislature.
Yeah.
We're almost evenly split. Democrats have a small advantage in the House, tied in the Senate with a Republican vote. Small enough that enough Democrats left the party and voted with the Republicans on the key issues of the past issues, like the last two sessions, including the budget and affordable housing, which doesn't get as much attention. So which races are you targeting to try to keep the House, not just Democratic, but Working Families Democratic?
So we're just beginning our endorsement process and are still actually accepting folks to apply for the endorsement, which comes from anything from communications help to knocking on doors to talking about your issues in your district and making sure that our voters and members know about those issues. So definitely encouraging folks to continue applying for the endorsement. The easiest way is probably on the website, workingfamilies.org/Connecticut. And then there's a little button on the right that says endorsements. Click on that. The questionnaire is right there.
How many members do you have?
I don't actually know how many off the top of my head we have registered in Connecticut. It's often hard to find that information, but we have got about a good kind of judge for this is we got about 88,000 votes on our line for Senator Blumenthal in 2016, which was about 6% of his total vote count.
Okay.
So we range anywhere from like 1 to, I would say, probably 15% or so.
Oh, yeah,
what
would be an example of 15%?
I think Roland Lamar here in New Haven, I looked this up yesterday, got 13%.
Really?
Yeah, in 2016 in our line, so.
Now I guess he's sort of a poster boy for your party, right?
He's definitely been a close ally,
yeah. So you say we got votes at stake.
Yep.
And you got to pick which. Now, have you ever had an example, Sarah Ganong, of a Democrat who was an incumbent, whom you not only did not endorse, but you put someone else's name on the line in Connecticut?
Not while I have worked here. I believe that's happened a few times. And again, that's something that I want to make sure that we're getting our issues out there. So there might be somebody who's really, really strong on something that the incumbent Democrat's not really strong on. And we feel like we're not able to support what the incumbent Democrat is doing or the incumbent Republican is doing. So put somebody up there that's going to talk about those issues
in the
election.
One of the debates that are going on, not just in Connecticut, but nationally, is how to strengthen the party and advance a progressive agenda in an era nationally of Republican domination. One school says that you have to have authentic candidates that go strong for the Democratic or liberal agenda.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders or lefty, Bernie Sanders agenda,
Elizabeth agenda.
Warren, right? And that you got to, even in areas that seem like they're more centrist, it's not about the center anymore of getting people who sort of halfway feel conservative, halfway feel Republican, and halfway Democratic, but in fact go for legitimacy or what they perceive as authenticity, standing for something, so that a lot of people voted for both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, who have very different views. So that school of thought would say you guys are on the right track. You have a real set core of values, and you're saying even within the Democratic Party, we're going to go for the candidate who inspires people the most. I'm thinking of the 5th District, which I was shocked at how that convention turned out, and you had a young progressive candidate who really inspires people, gets standing ovations, and lost to someone who'd run a failed campaigns in the past, was kind of conservative Democrat for the nomination there at their convention. So that's one school. But the other school is that, and I'm thinking of Joe Manchin's race in West Virginia and other places like Claire McCaskill, where to win swing votes you have to, or where that win that middle in Connecticut, the large group of voters is unaffiliated, that you have to sort of go for the more moderate candidate who theoretically could do better in a general election.
Yeah,
is it about exciting the base and convincing general election voters to go to values over the long term, or is it about winning election by seeing who can appeal most to what's defined as the middle?
So I think the argument about the middle, the way you've spoken about it and the way a lot of people talk about it, is a little bit misrepresented, too. That I think paid family and medical leave is a great example, that there are people who support having paid family and medical leave, right? That would be the kind of more liberal position. There are people who oppose having paid family and medical leave. That would be the kind of CBIA, more conservative position.
Connecticut Business and Industry Association.
Yep, thank you. And then there's not really a middle position there. Maybe it's, oh, we do it with a tax credit instead of having it employee or employer funded or something like that, which would still be a more conservative position. So on that specific issue, and this is true in countless issues, the kind of middle ground that we envision all of these like centrist voters in doesn't actually really exist as a space.
Jim Hightower says the only thing in the middle of the road is a dead armadillo. Right?
Yeah, so it's this space that doesn't really exist and we don't actually see people inhabiting and living in. And I think people like to say they're independent and like to say they're unaffiliated and don't want to be associated with a major party or a label or anything like that. But their values are not actually in this kind of continuum of left to right necessarily on most issues.
Right, like people voted for Trump were against free trade.
Yeah.
Which certain Democrats and Republicans were on one side and certain Democrats and Republicans were on the other.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the Working Families Party side. Yeah. Here on Dateline New Haven and WNHH FM 103.5, your home for community radio, live streamed at newhavenbin.org. Janet Ellen Koch, Lena Lentini, David Taylor, thanks for tuning in and checking in on Facebook to our show today. We're talking to Sarah Ganong, who is the political director of the Connecticut Working Families Party, and in New Haven, where she lives, is also organizing a New Haven chapter. How's that going? How big is the New Haven chapter?
We are a few members strong right now. It's a little bit tougher during a legislative session because a lot of the work is going up to Hartford and advocating, and a lot of the New Haven delegation is pretty strong on issues that we care about, like raising the minimum wage and paid family and medical leave. So we're really excited to be getting folks kind of back into the swing of things and doing things a little bit more locally now instead of having a lot of the asks be, let's drive to Hartford.
Even number advocate. Years are local, odd number of years are local elections, even number of years are state elections.
Yes.
But you were on the map last year. Now, you ran for mayor. You weren't trying to win. You wanted to be on the ballot to get enough votes so that Working Families Party's line would be there in future elections, correct?
Yeah, so trying to open the space for future folks to run as progressives.
So now when someone runs for mayor, and I guess Alder too.
Yes, yeah, any offices in New Haven. Yeah.
Now, because you got enough votes last year, they will now be able to be endorsed by the Working Families Party. How many votes did you get? What percent?
I got about 8%.
Whoa.
Needed 1%.
1%? Yeah, 8 times much. Well, tell me about that experience. What was it like running and not running for mayor?
We were really excited by the support. I was honestly a little bit surprised since I didn't really spend a ton of time actually out talking to voters other than saying this is what we're doing and trying to make sure that progressives can run in future elections. A positive experience and certainly got the outcome that we were hoping for.
You win one debate. Folks. What was that like?
I wouldn't say it was necessarily in the debate, but did speak with Marcus Paca on stage at one point,
What did you come away from that campaign thinking about some local issues? What did you identify as the most important working families type issues for the city of New Haven to address?
I think making sure that there's equitable access to good paying jobs, which is something that we see all around Connecticut, that there's a lot of poverty here and a lot of issues stem from people not being able to afford to pay their rent or pay their utilities, take care of their families in the ways that they need to.
So often, two pillars of your party sort of not always on the same page on this one, not of your party, but of sort of that side of the equation. So a lot of times when it comes to creating jobs, people mm-hmm. in the Harp administration say we want to get new employers in town and we want to get construction going. And the Board of Alders is dominated by a progressive union, Unite mm-hmm. Here. And if they're, let's say the Hotel Duncan, there was going to be a renovation job with a lot of construction jobs, they wanted to hold that up until they can get them to agree to a card check neutrality, meaning they'd allow a union come in without mm-hmm. opposing it for, I think, four or five workers. So there is a criticism of not all unions, but the one union on the board, of conflicting with a jobs agenda. Do you have any feeling of that after having been in the mix for a year?
No, that's not really something that came up when I was talking to, admittedly, very limited number of voters. But I'm sure that's something that we'll be thinking about and we'll be considering as considering cross-endorsing candidates for Alder and Mayor next year.
How about the ongoing debate over civilian review boards? So that's controversial right now because mm-hmm. we had a referendum in New Haven where they said we need a new civilian review yeah. board that will really have teeth in having outside independent look at how the police deal with people in controversial cases. And now there's a question whether that can have subpoena power. Mm-hmm. Advocates of these boards say that in cities that have the subpoena power, that makes all the difference. If they don't, it has no ability. Mm-hmm. People on the board, including some progressive Democrats, say we just don't have the power under the state law, so we can't do it. And other people have said what you can do is you can give an alder, like the committee chair or the mm-hmm. board president, they can use their existing subpoena power and give it to the civilian review board and just sit as part of it or have that be a board of all the committee. And a third view is that we should strengthen the police commission and since they mm-hmm. have subpoena power and turn into a true independent body to look into misconduct the way they did in the 1970s. Any thoughts on that?
I think that's, again, something that's probably going to be coming up a lot next year in 2019 for the local elections. And that we'll be encouraging chapter activists and local folks that we work with, particularly people of color, to weigh in. Mm-hmm. But I really haven't looked into the issue in terms of the legalities and figuring out what way makes more sense or anything. So don't feel comfortable speaking kind of on behalf of the
gotcha.
Movement for Black Lives on that issue now.
So I forgot some of this. You've told us this before on the radio. You grew up where, Sarah?
I'm from Ledyard, Connecticut.
Ledyard?
Yeah.
Well, Native American tribes, right?
Yes. So yeah, right smack between Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods.
Yeah. And Adi Nunez checks in. Hello. Nice to see you. Listen today.
Hi, welcome. Adi,
thank you for listening. What brought you to New Haven? What got you involved in the Working Families Party?
So I came to New Haven about 3 years ago to work for an environmental organization.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Connecticut
yep.
Front
yeah,
for the Environment.
This before. Yep. Yeah. So
you did
I was
a good job
there.
On that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. We fixed climate change. So I moved on.
Yeah. All right. Way to go. So now we can breathe.
Yeah. Yep. You're welcome.
Now you can get us better pay and working
yeah.
hours.
Yeah. Yeah. That's baby steps. Baby steps. Yeah. So I was working there, got involved in the Bernie Sanders campaign and really felt like I had a heart for working to get folks elected and working on a broader range mm-hmm. Of issues through the Bernie campaign and through Josh's campaign, and then got connected with Working Families through that.
And you obviously you discovered you have a talent for organizing
Hopefully.
Vote polling. I mean, that's yes. what was really impressive about the LA. That's the stuff that often idealistic activists aren't as involved mm-hmm. in because the rewards that come from that aren't always as important to them being issue-oriented.
Yeah.
I think what I learned from you with that is that it's just always important to ask people to participate.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were really proud. That was the turnout for Josh's primary in August. Had a higher turnout than the Murphy-Bisowitz primary for state wow. Senate in that district. So that was really impressive. We were really proud of the voters, really proud of the team that helped do that. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of races that we want to keep running at Working Families, too, of inspiring people to actually come out for those progressive champions like Josh, like Roland, like Robin, like a lot of people in the New Haven area.
Well, these issues, that the left has always confronted this issue of whether to work within the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. or and because they say that that's really where the bulk of African-American and liberal mm-hmm. and progressive voters live, and unions, because
yes.
they care about winning. We have a two-party mm-hmm. system, for better or worse, in this country, and if you really want to win and get results in legislation, you have to work within the Democratic Party. So it's been that hole in their groups before you, like the New American Movement and Democratic Socialist Organizing
yep.
Committee, that over my lifetime have always tried to work within the party.
Yeah.
And then there have been other people. The great debate's always among people who agree with each other.
Yeah.
And then the people who yeah. all felt that that's a mistake as long-term, the Democratic Party will always be beholden to corporate interests
mm-hmm.
and that you need to really be independent and build a third party like the Green Party, which has had several iterations, Citizens Party back when mm-hmm. I was in college, Socialist Party. I guess one issue is coalition building that includes people who might not agree with you
mm-hmm.
on a lot of issues versus a more kind of pure coalition that will maybe theoretically not compromise as much if they win power.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that question?
I think that's the question for the ages, frankly, in the kind of progressive realm. We really try to build power to win concrete victories. So having kind of theoretical debates and conversations about things that are not actually winning power for real working people and passing legislation that makes people's lives better is something that I'm personally uninterested in doing. And I think that a space that it's exciting that we get to occupy is sometimes we get to kind of be on the inside, get to hang out with the bigger players, and then sometimes we're in the space where we can call them out for doing things. Like two corporate Democrats this year voted against the Fair Work Week bill we were talking about.
Who were they?
In the Senate. It was Gail Slosberg and Joan Hartley.
How did I guess? Senators. No, Slosberg's not running for re-election. She also like helped almost single-handedly destroy affordable housing progress in the state with one of her votes. Is Hartley running again? Was West
yes, Hartford? I believe so.
Okay, are you running against her? Are you going to feel someone against her in a primary?
We have not made an endorsement in that race.
Is there a primary opponent?
I'm not sure, actually.
Are there any primary opponents in Connecticut to conservative Democrats who voted against the majority in some of these key issues like the budget and affordable housing?
Not on the Senate side that I know of off the top of my head, no.
How about the House side?
There's several folks who aren't running. So Lonnie Reed in Brantford
was
another one of the votes on the budget. She's not running again.
And is there more than one candidate from whom you're going to choose one?
That I don't know, actually. Need to be up on the filing.
That's
a little bit closer.
Yeah, a lot of districts to.
Yeah, no, we're just in the beginning, as I said, of doing the endorsement process.
Well, Sarah Ganong, before we say goodbye to you for today, I want to talk about New York. Because we've been reading a lot about the Working Families Party in New York in ways that touch on all these questions. Mm-hmm. So Working Families Party always got results by teaming up and supporting Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor, who really on some days is quite a progressive governor, can point to a lot of stuff he's passed. And on other days is quite a conservative governor, making deals with the Republicans in the state legislature to pass legislation and to really align with the charter movement. Mm-hmm. So last time he ran, the Working Families Party endorsed him. They felt burned because they felt he didn't come through with the promises he made them. So this time, and I always forget her name, even though she's a celebrity, this time they...
And a strong activist for public education.
Right. She, Cynthia Nixon.
Yes.
She's running against them in a Democratic primary on the left, like legalizing marijuana, reviving the corruption, anti-corruption commission that he personally dismantled when he got too close to his administration. The Workplace Party decided to endorse Nixon. And in the days leading up to that, Cuomo's people really played hardball. Mm-hmm. And now they try to get groups to pull money. If you want to play ball with Cuomo and get dollars from the state government, you got to withhold your support for unions and community groups that are sticking with the Working Families Party. And unions who are a core of the Working Families Party's base were split, and some that stayed with Cuomo because they feared loss of access dropped out of your party because of this endorsement. Looking at that episode, what do you take from it?
So certainly don't want to speak on behalf of our allies friends
just Sarah,
in New York.
Sarah.
But I think it's really exciting that the party there decided to go with what the kind of activists and the grassroots were saying, and really excited to be endorsing somebody who's been a longstanding champion of public education, of improving working conditions, all the things that we kind of stand for in Connecticut, in New York, and nationwide for those issues. And I think that certainly no hard feelings with the folks that felt like they did need to leave. Cuomo has delivered a lot of things for a lot of people in New York, so certainly understand that and remain friends with everybody and really looking forward to hopefully coming back together with folks.
So staying
at
some
on
point. The issues. No permanent enemies, no permanent friends, just permanent interests.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sarah Ganong, it's always great to have you here on Dateline New Haven.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to see you, Paul.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks. And we're going to take a little break and come back, if he's here, I don't see him yet, with Mohit Agarwal from the FRAC, the Financial Review Audit Commission, which has a big role to play this week and the coming weeks about whether we're going to borrow $250 million in New Haven to start meeting our pension obligations. He's not sure that's a good idea. But Sarah Ganong has a good idea, which is to live in New Haven and make a difference. Another young person who's making our city stronger from the Working Families Party. So hold on. Check out the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. And we'll be right back at you after this interview.